Welcome back in. Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Taking your thoughts all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, yesterday, the first full day of name, image, and likeness laws going into effect in the world of college sports. And man, did we see a lot yesterday going on that realm. We talked about it yesterday on the show, the Milo Sweet Tea with Bo Nix, the Auburn quarterback. Apparently the Cameo-like website, I forget what the name of it is now, but where Matt Corral was.
Dreamfield?
Dreamfield. Yeah, Dreamfield.
Yeah. Yep.
Matt Corral going for $10,000 to make videos. Good for him. Hope somebody pays that price for him. There was a couple doozies yesterday. I think my favorite one of all yesterday was Arkansas wide receiver Trey Knox.
Dang it. I knew you were going to go with that.
The PetSmart partnership that he came out with. Trey Knox at wide receiver. A picture with his husky. The PetSmart, an easy way to my heart, is a dog. And Trey Knox got there yesterday. I think he's my favorite of the whole NIL sponsorships yesterday.
He had his pup, Blue, with him. So I love that one. That was great. Yeah, there's a lot of – first of all, like overall, I got to say, I don't know that I've felt this good about college sports in a long – I don't know that I've felt this good about college sports since I've covered it going back, and we're going back a lot of years.
Like yeah, you're old.
I'm old. And there's just like – there's – often been an uneasy feeling, especially, you know, just in recent years, the money has been so outrageous, and it's just the same thing, you know, for the athletes. Again, a lot of them who just don't end up having these professional opportunities. So overall, it's just been awesome to me. I've loved this. One of my favorites is Jordan Bohannon from Iowa is a paid appearance at a fireworks store. I love that. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, the Iowa basketball player.
Come celebrate America.
America at the fireworks store. But there's some really good, you know, there's some really interesting things that some of these guys have gotten into. And men and women, by the way. And, by you know, LSU gymnast Olivia Dunn is about to make a lot of money off this.
TikTok's going to be her friend.
Yeah. It's great, you know. I mean, like we never, ever have to – sit there, you're on a college campus. Ooh, the star quarterback. How does he have that Range Rover? Now it's like, yeah, well, he just signed a sweet deal with a Smoothie King. That's how. You know, whatever. Speaking of Smoothie King, Miles Brennan has signed with Smoothie King for LSU. So, I mean, there's just – this is all going – again, at some point, this is just going to become the norm. And it's just like Olympic athletes, like you just assume that they have money because they're really good at what they do and people want to be a part of them. So we have a piece at The Athletic that runs down a lot of these that I just talked about. And here's the first comment on the story from John Kay. It is difficult not to think this is the end of college sports as anything other than professional minor leagues. Good for the athletes involved. Are these colleges seen as little more than AAA outposts for professional leagues? I think the sheen will wear off quickly. John, don't watch college sports anymore then. I'm going to continue to love college football and cheerleaders and bands and full stadiums and the NCAA tournament, and it's going to be awesome, and it's not going to be different. I'm sorry. Like at some point you get pissed off with the same old complaints like this is the minor leagues. It's the minor leagues if they're paid employees of the schools, and that will completely change the system and it won't be the same. This is how the system stays the same for the things that we love about it.
I agree. And I thought yesterday was really cool to watch, and a couple of big money deals already. Derek King of Miami inks a deal with the College Hunks Hauling Junk. That's a moving company.
Really? I like that one. College Hunks Hauling Junk.
Yeah. Derek King
elite
and
name for a business.
Bubba Bolden, $20,000 each.
Wow.
$20,000.
Well, and I think Derek King is also involved. Like, he got into a company that's actually going to be involved in getting people things, right? He and Mackenzie Milton.
Yeah.
Well, that's Dreamfield. So there you go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, here you go. Yes, College Hunks Hall. That's so great. No, there's some kids here who obviously have an entrepreneurial spirit and have been ready for this and pouncing on it. which is, I mean, again, like and Grant Furking for Tennessee is another great example. And we talked to David Ubben about it yesterday. I mean, he's been already an entrepreneur, you know, before a lot of things, you know, I mean, when you had to be careful, now he can just open it up and get involved in this. I love it, man. I think it's great. I really do. And, you know, of course, the whole recruiting inducement aspect of it is going to be interesting. I'm all for that, too. I understand that some people are going to try to stop that, and that'll be interesting. That's a big question moving forward. Another question that has been answered that we got asked a lot on the show yesterday was the apparel question. And no big surprise here, but if you've seen, a lot of these schools have put out their own policies. And I saw a lot of them yesterday after the show that had, you know, certain disclaimers, including, yeah, you know, the apparel will be the school's apparel deal, which makes sense. I mean, the school's like,
sure,
we're getting millions from Nike. You're not wearing Adidas. So, I mean, that's something to keep in mind. And it really, what it does is it probably just reinforces, quote unquote, Nike kids are going to go to Nike schools, and quote unquote, Adidas kids are going to go to Adidas schools. But schools are safeguarding themselves there. And look, I don't begrudge that. I mean, that's part of the deal. Those apparel deals are big for schools. They're big for coaches too, by the way. If you look at a coach's contract, a lot of times a big chunk of that contract is the Nike deal.
Yep.
So that's an answer there. Not a especially surprising one.
No, and I'm glad that we got some clarity on that one, because that was a big point of emphasis yesterday on the text line of what's going to happen with these apparel companies. Because, look, especially in basketball, it makes sense. They're going after these kids. Like, they want to sign these kids to some shoe contracts. Now, what you've just come out and said, it was going to happen anyway, but that's just confirmation that, I mean, you're going to get into bidding wars with these schools sometimes. If you're a Nike school and the Nike company wants that athlete, they're going to pony up before that kid commits. And Adidas is going to pony up. Under Armour is going to pony up. And then it becomes a bidding war at that point.
But again,
which I'm cool with.
It's already happened.
Yeah.
It already happens. I mean, Marvin Bagley's dad's AAU team had pretty good Nike funding before he went to the Nike school called Duke.
It did.
Like, a lot. I mean, this is – so – that's not new. I still do think there will probably be some situations that come up, you know, where there's a conflict there. And some of these schools put in, like, without express written consent or something like that. So I could see that being challenged here or there. Like Zion, you know, early in Zion's freshman season is Adidas like, I don't care, man. You got to get that guy. We have got to get that guy. I don't care. Get in there.
Yeah.
You know, and like Zion sits out the rest of the season so he can be with Adidas. Yeah, who knows? I don't think that would have been the outcome. But I could see that coming up with some of the very, very top athletes who are being pursued by various companies.
Elijah, what did you think of day one of name, image, and likeness in the world of college sports? What was your favorite that you saw?
Man, the Trey Knox one was really good, but the Michigan State player, I don't know if he's a punter
Matt Coughlin, kicker, yeah.
Oh, it was amazing.
Kicker. Oh, yes. The endorsement of the Locked On Spartans podcast, where he says, I haven't listened to it, but I'm sure it's not bad or doesn't suck or something like
that's
that.
That's amazing. Like,
that's really good, and I'm curious as to how much they paid for him to say that, because that would be funny.
I'm willing to bet, though, a lot of people listened to the Locked On Spartans podcast yesterday.
Absolutely.
Well, so.
Absolutely.
So. Yeah, my buddy, so Matt Sheehan, who was a former state newser, who was a student writer when I was covering Michigan State, runs that podcast. And so he put up a tweet the night before, who's going to get the first like $100 or whatever to promote our podcast. So I think it was like $100. I'm going to try to find that tweet. I think that's what he said. I saw his tweet the night before. And it was like, who's the first athlete who's going to promote our podcast for like $100? And so Matt Coughlin jumped on. That's pretty sweet. You can kind of make fun of it and still get $100 for it. Good for you. Should we get some Belmont Vanderbilt kids here? Can we round up some scratch?
Yeah, for
you
sure.
Know? Make sure you listen to Robbie and Rexroad. I'm sure it doesn't totally suck.
Some TSU kids. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Hey, I'd take that endorsement. Maybe we should do that. Mason on YouTube says, I can't wait for the NCAA football video game to come back. Wasn't it stopped because of the name, image, and likeness issues.
Oh, yeah. Well,
the answer is yes.
That's coming back.
And EA Sports came out with a statement, I believe yesterday, on this, saying, quote, we are watching the recent developments regarding student-athlete name, image, and likeness very closely. It's still very early in the stages at this point, and we plan to explore the possibility of including players in EA Sports College Football. For now, our development team is focused on working with our partners at CLC to ensure the game authentically showcases the great sport of college football and the more than 100 institutions signed on to be featured in our game. So it's happening.
It is, but I tell you what, and by the way, I was wrong. Sheehan did not put out a number, so who knows? I hope he paid Coughlin $10K for that. Hopefully you've got that kind of money, Sheehan.
No pressure.
But, you know, the thing is, if you're EA now, I mean, you need some price control. You're going to pay every – I mean, they – right? We know how that game used to be. They've got scouting reports on a lot of players.
Oh, yeah.
And tendencies that reflect a lot – which is, again, it's just hilarious to think about what the world used to be like. Like, how could it have gotten there? But people loved it. So are people going to love it so much that it's worth – paying X amount to all these college football players? I don't know. That's going to be interesting. I hope so. That'd be great to see it come back and see their names. This does remind me, anybody who's old enough to remember Tecmo Bowl, you know, they struck deals with the NFL, but some of the guys in the league didn't do it. So Randall Cunningham didn't do it. He was QB Eagles. Although it was totally Randall Cunningham too, which is interesting. So I don't know how that all worked. Jim Kelly didn't do it. It was QB Bills. But everybody else had their names on there.
Yeah.
This will be an interesting negotiation because that's a lot of money you have to pay to have all these characteristics for your game that make it real that you didn't have to pay a single dime before. Is it worth it?
It's interesting.
Do people love?
Well, it's like, and that's one thing for the college, but this happens with pro games as well, like NBA 2K. Charles Barkley's not in it. He's never been in it because they won't pay him what he wants to be paid. Like, you could have all these throwbacks, like Michael. You can play with Michael Jordan if you want to on NBA 2K. You cannot play. You can't find Charles Barkley because they can't use his name, image, or likeness.
And there's
too
some,
bad.
Yeah, there's some teams. There's some teams that are like those retro teams where there's only like six available players, and the rest are like computer generated dudes named John Williams that wear number 99.
Yeah,
and yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so they paid Jordan enough. So Barkley probably wanted Jordan money for it. That's probably what happened, right?
Probably so.
They wouldn't pay him Jordan money.
I guess not.
If you would have
Jordan probably doesn't care. He's like, yeah, whatever.
If you would have finished,
I got enough money.
Yeah. Well, Jordan's like, okay, sure, I'll take another whatever.
Yeah.
Barkley, all you had to do was finish that series in 93.
It would
all be different, Charles.
We'll continue the conversation on name, image, and likeness when we come back, including how big a deal could this be for women's sports as well in the college realm? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 94.9 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in tomorrow night as Nashville SC takes on Philadelphia at Nissan Stadium. Pregame starts at 6:45 and the match begins at 7 o'clock. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. We're also back on the air, so thanks for hanging with us. We were working through some technical difficulties, but I think we've got it figured out.
Yeah. Thank you to all of you who reached out.
Yes.
And so, told us, but did not scream at us.
There we go. We appreciate your patience.
Your kindness. Jared, you can learn something from them.
A lot of kindness this morning here on the show. Talking right now about name, image, and likeness in the world of college athletics. And Joe, I'm interested to see because I think we're always kind of brainstorming and wondering about ideas that could help grow women's sports. And there are a lot of women's sports that are very successful. Obviously, women's college basketball is a big deal, especially here in this state with the powerhouse program out east in Tennessee. They're trying to get back to that elite level in the world of women's college basketball. I don't know if y'all watched the women's softball tournament, but it was pretty awesome, and the ratings were pretty great as well. So lots of great sporting events out there in the women's game. My question for you, Joe, is how does name, image, and likeness change the women's games in college athletics? How big of a deal could this be for women's athletes who, as we know, I mean, and this has been a big talking point with the WNBA as well. I mean, I think you can make a pretty good argument. A lot of these players are more popular in college than they are in the WNBA. How big a deal is name, image, and likeness for players like that who are stars in college and can probably make a pretty good amount of money based on what we've seen through the first day of this so far.
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, it's for a long time, I mean, this has been really important to me. I mean, I think women's athletics is finally getting the respect it deserves, and we're finally seeing that if you invest in something and cover it and things like that, like there's actually a huge audience for it. In fact, I mean, I think the softball World Series outperformed the baseball World Series pretty significantly in the ratings, just as one example. I mean, the women's basketball tournament, obviously there was all the stuff this year about the unequal conditions, men's, women's, yeah. Like stuff like that. Like, it's got to end. And we're to a point now where I think beyond, obviously, for a long time, gymnasts, you know, Olympic sports, in the Olympics every 4 years, you have figure skaters and things like that who have been very popular. But women's team sports are finally getting the like more traction, which is great to see. Now, of course, I'm in a state where, you know, I would say Pat Summitt's program is – the greatest program that will ever be in this state. It will ever be.
It's pretty good.
So people here are familiar with that. But overall, at large, it's made a lot of progress. Still more to go. But this is really interesting with name, image, likeness. And I'll be honest. Like initially, I thought more in terms of, okay, it's going to be like football stars, men's basketball stars, and here and there, you know, some women's basketball stars too. But there's a lot of different angles to that. And just the social media following, that's the thing that I just didn't really – I still don't totally understand it. I'm just reading things that tell me they'd make this much money. I'm saying, wow, okay, good for them. But Olivia Dunn, we mentioned her, the LSU gymnast, she's about to make a ton. But it's also, apart from women's athletes, it's really interesting. Like Pat Forty had a good piece on this, SA.com, about some of the athletes who are going to do really well just because of their presence. For example, Adrian Nunez, who doesn't really play for Michigan basketball, but apparently he just has this really huge following because of his personality and stuff he does on social media.
Yep.
Minnesota wrestler Gable Stevenson has 245,000 Instagram followers. I don't know why, but people do that. They cultivate that, and now they can cash in on it. And you have the twins, the women's basketball twins who play for Fresno State,
yep,
who Haley and Hannah Cavender, who also are about to just cash in huge, and not necessarily because they're great on the basketball court, but because they, you know, that has given them a platform, sort of a public figure situation, and then they've cultivated this following. So a lot of that is going to play out here, and I think you're going to see the great like women's golfer like Lorena Ochoa a few years ago at who's now on the tour, but she was a dominant college golfer. Okay, I mean right now she, you know, if she was in college right now she'd have like a ping deal, and just like any player on tour she'd probably make a couple hundred K
yeah
from wearing that stuff, and these are things that, again, there's a benefit beyond just like the superstar football, men's basketball people.
Well, and you brought up Olivia Dunn. I mean, she's got over 1 million followers on Instagram and over 1 million followers on TikTok. So, I mean, that's two different platforms right there with over 1 million followers. She's going to make more than $1 million out of this. Like, she's going to make an unbelievable amount of money on this. It's just one of those things where, and look, I realize that example is extreme. I think she's the most followed college athlete, period.
Yeah, and look, and I mean, it's not, she's not a great gymnast. She's a celebrity.
Yeah.
You know, she's an Instagram celebrity. But again, like that should never. All this is just treat. It's just college students who are now just being treated like all the other college students.
Right.
I mean, let's contrast this with, when we talk about deregulating. Joanne P. McCauley, okay, she used to coach Michigan State women's basketball. She went to a golf club, okay, in the summer. She said hello to a 16-year-old who she knew through the family. She had to report herself as an NCAA violation because it was not during a recruiting period, even though this 16-year-old girl did not play basketball, was not a recruit, but she was a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
And so she had to report herself and submit. And this is like, I wrote this story because I used Open Records to get all their violations. And you go through the violations, you're like, oh my God, you had to report that? I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Like, things like that that can just be done away with. And now college athletes can be treated like college athletes, like adults who live in the United States of America.
Yes, absolutely. It's going to be interesting to see how this works. Like, I think back to Candace Parker. Like, Candace Parker at Tennessee. And I realize that she's gone to the WNBA and she's been on TNT and she's doing well for herself. So Candace Parker's fine. But you can't convince me that Candace Parker's peak of her popularity in her playing career wasn't while she was at the University of Tennessee. She'd have made a ton of money at the University of Tennessee. Like, it's just – it's interesting to think about it. Look, we saw a bunch of news yesterday with Reggie Bush trying to get back and reinstated in the Heisman part of this. And you're going to see a lot of former athletes talking about this. Johnny Manziel was vocal on Twitter as well. But, like, as far as the women's game is concerned, it does make me think of, you know, Diana Taurasi, you know, Candace Parker, Tamika Catchings, all these different players that had this been in effect during their heyday in college, they'd have made a lot of money.
So if you're a Tennessee fan, and it could be the next star, but if you're a Tennessee fan, put yourself back at that time, and you knew that Candace Parker was starring for Pat Summitt's team, and you were winning national championships, and she was also pulling about $500K off various endorsements. Does that take away your enjoyment of Lady Vols basketball, Tennessee, Candace Parker?
Probably not.
I need people to explain to me why this bothers you.
Well, I think the answer is simple. I think there's a misunderstanding a lot of what's going on here. Like, I think they're just afraid that this is going to become, you know, free agency in college sports, which it already basically is. And it's also, you know, the idea of schools paying the players, which is not happening. Schools are not paying the players. The operation on the teams themselves, in the leagues themselves, it's not really going to change all that much. You're going to be able to make a little bit of money on the side.
Right.
Like, I mean, a normal college student.
I mean, the enjoyment of the game aspect of it, that
should be the same.
Well, but that's separate from this, and that probably had, I mean, like, one and done is something. Now, some people, you know, embrace that. I mean, Kentucky fans have kind of had to say, hey, we get a brand new team every year, so, okay. If it's a great team, fine, right?
Sure.
But, I mean, again, if you're of a certain age, you remember, you know, when Patrick Ewing played 4 years in college basketball. You know, I mean, you remember when Jordan's like, okay, I guess I'll go after my junior year to the NBA. It used to have a lot more continuity, a lot less transferring, you know, a lot more you could watch players grow at your favorite school. That's very different. And I get that from a fan experience perspective, that's not as good, but that's separate from the making money thing.
When we come back, we will switch gears. We'll be joined by Dan Rosen from NHL.com. We'll get into the trade of Victor Arvidsson with him, also the Stanley Cup final as well. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in our good friend Dan Rosen from NHL.com. Dan, what's going on? I saw you on TV the other day. You're looking sharp. What's happening, brother?
How are you guys? Everything's good? Yeah, no, I know you saw me. You sent me a picture of it. You know, it's just that dynamic presence. That's what I wrote back to you.
Really is.
On TV.
Really?
I'm just kidding. No, and everything's good. You know, we got game 3, 2-0 Tampa Bay. Not surprised by it at all. And here we go. A couple more games left in this season.
Here we go. A couple more left in this Stanley Cup final. We'll get to the final a little bit more in detail coming up here in just a few minutes. Dan, I do want to get your thoughts initially to the trade of Victor Arvidsson from the Predators to the LA Kings. Predators get back a second rounder this year, a third rounder next year. Just your reaction to that trade. What did you think of the trade from the Predators' point of view?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, you look at where Nashville, I kind of agree with where David Poile was going with this. You look at where Nashville was, say, 3, 4, 5 years ago. You look at where they are now. three, 4, 5 years ago, they were a Stanley Cup contender, and now they're a playoff contender. And there's a big difference, right? You know, in one case, you can go out and really believe when you go into the playoffs that you got a shot to win the Stanley Cup. In the other case, you're just trying to get into the playoffs. And, yeah, if you get into the playoffs, look at Montreal. They're case in point, right? But you got to be clicking at that point, too. And I just look at the Predators and I say, where are they going? You know, with the core that they had, where is it going? And to me, it wasn't going very far. So Arvidsson, you know, you shave about $4.5 million or so off your cap. You get back a couple of picks. And now you can use that $4.5 million or so, whatever his cap is, it was in that neighborhood, to re-energize the group with somebody different. You know, it's not like Victor Arvidsson's a bad player. By any stretch, he's not. He's an aggressive and energetic goal-scoring type of player. But it's just a bit of a change, you know, a bit of a 90-degree turn, say, and just say, all right, we got to go in a different direction here, and let's see if we can plug this, use this money that we have available now to find something different, and maybe that's the key for our team right now. So I that's kind of my take on it from the Predators' perspective, because getting back draft picks, you're not getting back anybody that's going to help your team right now or probably in the next 2 or 3 years, but you're getting the cap space that allows you to just go in a different direction.
Of course, we've also speculated today, Dan, that, you know, more draft capital now. Maybe as you have discussions, you know, with the Kraken, with the expansion draft coming up, you could swing something because, of course, I think the Preds, if they could unload a Ryan Johansson or a Matt Duchene, I think they would be interested in that. Do you think that there would be interest on the other end of that?
Well, I don't know why there wouldn't be. I mean, both of those are good players, you know? You know, that's the thing. And that's my point with where Nashville is right now with the core that they've had, is it just wasn't connecting. That's not to say that Ryan Johansson's not a good player and Matt Duchene's not a good player on their own. They are very good players. And I think there could be and probably should be interest on, you know, on especially the Kraken side, but in a lot of teams' perspectives, you know, on those types of players. So I do think so. I think it's another thing you're looking at there. But I don't look at David Poile and say to myself, he's going into a rebuild here and just trying to get draft picks and all that stuff. I think he wants to use the capital that he's gaining and the cap that he's gaining to retool this thing to so it spins forward pretty quickly.
Dan, obviously a lot of interest here locally in Nashville to this Stanley Cup final with Shea Weber being involved with the Montreal Canadiens. But as you said, Tampa Bay up 2-0. They just look like an absolute machine that they've looked like for the last 2-3 years. What have you made of this series so far, and is there any way, in your opinion, Montreal can climb back in this thing now with Game 3 coming up at home?
Look, I think Montreal can win Game 3. If they play the way they did in Game 2, they can win Game 3, and they, you know, it's a home game for them. I know there's only 3,500 in the stands, but, you know, it's a home game. It's different. They got the last change. They can get the Philip Dano line out against Braden Point's line. There's a lot of different things they can do. But can they beat Tampa Bay 4 out of 5? I mean, I don't see that.
Tough.
Tampa Bay hasn't lost back-to-back in the playoffs in 2 years. Like, I just don't see how Montreal can beat them. That's why they needed, absolutely needed a split. And they played a really strong game. Was that their best game, Montreal? It might be. You know, their game that they played in Game 2 was really good. They made 2 or 3 mistakes, and they ended up in the back of their net. And that was it. You know, I mean, that was the case right there. They outplayed the Lightning in that game, and they couldn't come away with a win. That's got to be demoralizing. That goal by Blake Coleman is a devastating goal for the Montreal Canadiens. It's just a crushing goal. It was a great goal for the Lightning.
How many times is he going to do that, by the way? Is he just going to start diving all the time, scoring goals from every different angle?
I love how he said after the game, like, you never really want to dive on the ice. Yeah, you do if your stick's out and you're poking the puck in the net. That's fine, you know? But no, you know what? I mean, that ended the worst period I'd seen Tampa Bay play in a very long time, and I've covered them throughout the entire playoffs, and they still end up 2-1. To me, that just says a lot about where this team is and the way they're going right now. And I don't see Montreal winning 4 out of 5 in this series. I just can't see it. Tampa Bay, what they do, everything that Tampa Bay does, let me say this, all the advantages that Montreal had in the first 3 rounds, Tampa Bay is better at.
So, Dan, if this goes as expected here and ends up as – and I guess what we can all expect, Vasilevskiy is going to get a shutout, right, in the decisive game.
But, apparently that's,
I mean,
the trend.
That's what he does.
That's the way it goes, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, where do you – where's the discussion around this team in terms of, you know, relative to some of the other great teams we've seen, you know, in modern history in the NHL?
Well, the discussion to me is ongoing because – the core is still in place. Nobody's going anywhere. They have a cap situation that they're going to have to deal with in the offseason because obviously we know about how Kucherov was on LTIR all year. So there is something that's going – it's not going to be the same group returning, but the core is not going anywhere. Kucherov, Stamkos, Hedman, Vasilevsky, McDonough, you know, Point. These guys, Killorn – it's ongoing, and I kind of the way I felt about the Pittsburgh Penguins after they won their back-to-back, right? You know, it was an ongoing discussion because they had a lot of the same pieces. And now, you know, we're talking now four years later from that, and it's not the same, obviously, for the Pittsburgh Penguins. They still have Crosby, Malkin, and Letang, but everything else around them is pretty much different, except for maybe a few other pieces. So we'll see where it goes, but back-to-back, you're in the discussion now of a dynasty. And let's see where it goes from here. But it's an ongoing discussion. We'll see what Tampa Bay, if they end up winning this, can they win three in a row? I mean, we'll see what roster they return. But wouldn't they be a favorite if you look at them on paper right now?
You would think so. Absolutely. Dan Rosen from NHL.com on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And, Dan, we had somebody throw this question out to us the other day, and I want to get your thoughts on it. Shea Weber, obviously, he's going to be 36 in August. So – he's been in the league a long time, 16 years. Obviously been a great player both in Nashville and Montreal as well. This is his first trip to the Stanley Cup Final. He has not won a Norris Trophy, but a lot of the numbers are there. Is Shea Weber a Hall of Famer in your mind?
Shea Weber is probably a Hall of Famer, but he's not a Hall. I don't think he gets in on the first year. He may not get in on the second year either. He's been a terrific defenseman in the National Hockey League, big, strong, so well respected in the NHL. But if you look at the guys who are, you know, in the Hall of Fame, a lot of them have either A, won the Cup, or A and B, won an award, you know, and won the, you know, especially the, you know, the Norris. And, you know, he's kind of been, you know, he just hasn't had that opportunity. He just hasn't done it, you know, and there's always been somebody a little bit better than him each season to win the Norris Trophy. And that's not to say in one of these seasons he couldn't have done it, but just he just didn't. So I think eventually, out of the respect that he has around the league and from people all over, eventually he gets in, especially also with his international stuff. I mean, you know, he's a two-time gold medal winner on the Olympic stage. Probably gets in, but I wouldn't expect it on the first round of voting for him, and maybe not on the second round of voting either.
Dan, at the risk of sounding like quite a homer here, how the heck did the GMs have UC Saros 6 for the Vezina?
Yeah, you know what? I didn't look at the voting total all the way through, but he was awesome. I mean, that's a great question. That also might have to do a little bit with name recognition, right? You know, like, the team was fourth, kind of got in, but a little bit barely. He's not Pekka Rinne in terms of name recognition. I don't know. There's no real explanation for that for me. I thought he would be a finalist. If he wasn't a finalist, I thought he was fourth.
Dan Rosen from NHL.com has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexford. You can check out his great coverage of the Stanley Cup Final at NHL.com. You can also catch him on the NHL Network as well. Dan, appreciate your time to join us this morning, brother.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Dan Rosen from NHL.com, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. That's been the general reaction. A lot of perplexed looks about how UC Saros finishes sixth in the Vezina Trophy voting. Pretty much across the board. Wonder what the NHL GMs are doing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any GM this summer who's going to, like, lose sleep over being terrible at voting for that award, but they also probably wouldn't lose sleep if they didn't vote, so maybe that should happen for them.
Had someone on Periscope say Shea Weber is a first ballot Hall of Famer. What are you talking about?
Well, it's funny how, like, just having the Norris on the resume would strengthen it. It would.
Well, and that goes back to...
He's been so close. I mean, he's right there many years.
Well, that goes back to something that if you've watched the Predators for a long time...
I know what you're going to bring up. I know what you're going to bring up.
That's going to rub people the wrong way because he got absolutely gypped by Nick Lidstrom 1 year in the Career Achievement Award they gave Nick Lidstrom at the end of that year.
The perfect human. Come on, what do you want, man?
He's a great player. Shea Weber should have won the Norris that year. You can make an argument he got gypped another year as well. But he's been right there. You're right. He's never won the Norris. Like, at this point, he's not going to win the Norris. He's right. going to be 36. So, right. like, unless he just out of nowhere has another dominant season offensively, you know what he is defensively. He's always going to be good. He's physical. He's a great player. He's still a really, really good player. But, look, I think Shea Weber's a Hall of Famer, but I agree with Dan. I don't think it's going to be, you know, right off the bat or anything like that.
How about another gold medal? It'd be nice to see him have that opportunity.
I wonder if he'd make the team now.
Maybe not. They've got guys.
At that time, he'd be 37. I don't know.
He'd probably make it, right?
I don't know. They got some guys on defense and
guys. Yeah, they got guys.
We'll see. See what happens on that front. We'll continue the discussion on the Predators when we come back, including some interesting reactions yesterday for some players on the roster to the trade of Victor Arvidsson. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Join 102.5 The Game tomorrow from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. for the Nashville SC pre-match party at the Hard Rock Cafe downtown. Party before the match on Broadway and get some game swag, plus register to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Then head on over to Nissan Stadium for the 7 o'clock match. Get your tickets now for Nashville SC at NashvilleSC.com and tune into the match on ESPN 94.9. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thanks to Dan Rosen for joining us in the last segment. Part of what we talked about was the Stanley Cup Final. The other part, the trade that sends Victor Arvidsson to the Los Angeles Kings. The Predators receive a second-round pick this year, a third-round pick next year in return for Victor Arvidsson. We've talked about our reaction to the trade. Not much surprise there. You and I both said this offseason that would not be surprised if Victor Arvidsson got traded, and now he's been traded. There was quite a bit of surprise yesterday, I think, from some players on the Predators roster. Philip Forsberg, the most notable reaction, tweeting just an emoji of thumbs down on his Instagram story, posting that out there. Matt Duchene posting about Arvidsson as well. Ryan Johansson as well. And look, I don't read too much into this because, look, Arvidsson's a very popular guy in the locker room. He has been there for a long time. He's been with Forsberg since the beginning. He's been with Ryan Johansson since he's come in here. So you get it. When you trade away a player like that, it hurts. It hurts to see a friend go. It hurts to see somebody that you've gotten to know very well. I mean, look, Matt Duchene was posting pictures of Arvidsson and Yarncroak and their families and himself on a beach vacation in Florida together. So obviously, they are very close. I understand it from that side of it. But I said this earlier in the show. I think if you're a player and you're a part of this core and this is taking you by surprise or you're shocked that somebody like Arvidsson has been moved, I don't really know what you've been paying attention to the last few weeks. Like, I don't know how you could have watched what happened the last 3 years and not being able to get out of the first round and just think that year after year you're going to continually trot this core back out. Like, at some point, that was going to change, and now it's changed with Victor Arvidsson going.
But here's what one of those players might say back to you. Yes, but is this not a trajectory bump the other way, going 27-1, playing as well as we did, a couple plays away from beating Carolina? Does that not mean?
No.
Yeah, I'm not saying, but I'm just saying that's what they would say back. You know, I mean, obviously these guys, when you have a locker room, guys who like each other, which is not always easy to put together, you know, they want to stay together. They were much more vocal about it after the loss to Winnipeg in 18. But I agree with you that, like, at this point, you have to be prepared for this. You have to know that something like this is very possible. And also, I mean, you're a pro athlete in in any league. You've seen enough stuff where people get moved. If you're not really, if you're not a straight up contender slash buyer, I mean, you have to be prepared for some of this stuff. But I wonder, with Forsberg's thumbs down, I mean, he's a guy they want to extend. You know, I think the thing for these guys probably is, it's like the question some fans asked yesterday. Okay, what does this mean? On its face, I don't think it necessarily means. We don't think that this means that like Poyle is throwing up the white flag and let's spend 3 years trying to rebuild, right? But if you're a player, you're like, you just took away one of our best players for draft picks. You don't like that as a player.
No.
If you want to win right now, right? So, well, I don't think it's a big deal, but I do with Forsberg in particular. There's a guy that you want to be part of this organization. Presumably, you want to be part of this organization for another contract.
Well, look, I can tell you, and I don't think this is any surprise based on some of the reaction we saw yesterday on social media, but I can tell you with some conversations I had yesterday, they're not happy about this. Like, there are players that are not happy about this. Now, at the end of the day, is it the world's biggest deal? No. I mean, players get traded a lot. I'm sure there were players that weren't happy about Shea Weber getting traded either. Now, the difference in a trade like that is you're also getting a dynamic player coming back the other way. So I think as a player, you probably understand that part of it a little bit more. This one's a little bit tougher to take because, as Dan mentioned in the last segment, I mean, unless you just really hit on one of these draft picks, they're not going to help you for 3 years probably at minimum. So a lot of these guys may not even be here by the time this second-round pick or third-round pick enters into the fold here in Nashville. So that's a little bit tougher to take from a player's standpoint. But again, play better. Like that's the bottom line. Like, if you want to avoid situations like this, stop getting put out in the first round when this core is signed up and was the way this contracts were structured with this group is to be a competitor for years, and they're not right now. I think Dan put it best in the last segment. 3 years ago, they were a Stanley Cup contender. Right now, they're contending for the playoffs. That's a huge difference, and that's where this team is right now.
And you also have to understand that with Arvidsson, not just play better, but also understand – it may not be fair, and it may, I mean, the Bortuzzo hit got heavy rotation again. I forgot. That is just an enraging. Did anyone like go after him? Remind me.
No.
Because that second hit when he was trying to just get up in the net, that's disgusting, man.
It was a dirty play.
That was awful. But again, like, it's not fair, but understand that, I mean, that moment since then, it's not been the same. It's hard to look at things and think that's not a factor. It's hard to look at Arvidsson's performance the last couple of years and not think that he's lost something, probably because of injuries.
Yeah. Well, the other interesting part of this is, and I go back to the comments that David Poyle made yesterday on with Darren Donick and Chase. Like, it sounded like from what David Poyle was saying that Arvidsson and he had at least had a conversation about this. Like, he talked about a fresh start maybe being needed from both sides. I got away from that conversation thinking that Arvidsson, maybe he didn't request a trade, but he was okay with you exploring that option. So if that's the case, and there was a little frustration there from Victor Arvidsson, which, I mean, I guess I can see why that could have been the case. Was that not ever expressed to your teammates as well? Because seemed to be genuine shock yesterday from some of these guys that he was traded. Like, Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson talked about, man, this has turned into a really tough day very quickly. Like, I know you don't talk about everything with these guys, and part of this is just your business, and you've got to worry about your future and your career. But those two things to me are kind of interesting to think about, where I took away from the conversation with Poyle yesterday that this was not a huge surprise to Victor Arvidsson, and it seemed to be a pretty big surprise to his teammates.
Could that be a little Poyle spin on that?
Could be.
Because Arvidsson requesting a trade or coming close to that does not match up with the reaction, the big thumbs down, right?
Right.
I mean, the reaction to this from a Forsberg, if that's the case, is love you, man, going to miss you, go do great things in L.A. Thumbs down is like, what the heck are you doing? So that doesn't all add up together to me.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, I'd much rather have seen someone like Ellis get moved. We are defensively rich and offensively poor, and Ellis hasn't looked the same since the Corey Perry hit. Look, well, first off, that doesn't mean they're done with that trade yesterday. I mean, there's still, I think, some moves that could be coming this offseason, but I don't know that Ryan Ellis is going to be one of those. I get it. Victor Arvidsson, you look around this group right now, and this is very similar to what we thought last year heading into the season. You looked around and you said, all right, where exactly is the offense going to come from this group? And Arvidsson, while he's not been anywhere close to the player that he was 2 years ago, he still is a guy that can put the puck in the back of the net. Now I look at this team right now with not knowing what's going to happen in the expansion draft and some moves in free agency, maybe some moves via trades again. Right now, this team offensively, they need some work, and you're relying on younger guys to come in and fill that void. It's great if it works, but we've seen with younger guys that can be much easier said than done.
Yeah. I think there's more to come, okay? But this was the one. This was by far, I think, the easiest and the most sensible thing to do. One thing you brought up there, Robbie, on draft picks, it made me think, when is the last time David Poile traded a player for only draft picks?
I don't know. I'd have to think about that.
I mean, I think it's probably going way back, right?
I would think. I mean, notable player.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's –
because I'm sure he's I'm sure – I can't remember what Matt Irwin got traded for, but it was probably like a seventh-round pick.
Yeah, I'm talking more like –
notable player.
I'm talking about a notable player that actually changes your lineup and all you got back was futures. I mean, that – and that is – look, it's a lot easier for players in a locker room. You know, hey, I'm sure everybody was like, man, Sam Girard's going to be really good, right? But, okay, you're bringing in Kyle Turris, be your number two center. What a huge deal. I mean, whenever you're bringing someone back who's going to help you right now, it's a lot easier for players to take. When they see something like this, then they naturally have that question. Where is this going?
Frank on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, so if the Arvidsson move helps to sign Granlund, is Duchesne okay with that, or does he just want guys that he vacations with? There's a lot of hostility directed toward Matt Duchesne right
now. I don't know. I think Matt Duchesne, based on the last – things that he said publicly, is just really hoping he gets another chance to play here for the Preds and produce something close to his contract.
But to that point, you now freed up $4.25 million per year for the next 3 years with Arvidsson's contract being off the books. I would have to think part of what's in mind there is, hey, we're going to try to re-sign Mikael Granlund. It's not going to come before the expansion draft because that makes no sense. But right after the expansion draft into free agency, I would assume the Predators are going to take a pretty good run at Mikael Granlund at this point.
I don't see how that doesn't happen based on how good he was, how important he was in every aspect of hockey, and how John Hines seems to just love him.
Yeah.
With this coach, I don't think there's any question. And again, that's the last thing, very important thing, that justifies not selling him off at the deadline. To me, if you don't re-sign him, then I think you go back to that moment and say, man, you should have done it then.
Adam Vingan, our friend from The Athletic, texting in, Austin Watson traded for a fourth-round pick. Did you put him in the same category?
I don't think at that
Colin
point
Wilson?
I would. At that point, I wouldn't. What was Colin Wilson?
I can't remember.
But that's I would
look that up.
I would be more – based on Watson at that point, he had been healthy scratched a lot the year before. Right? He'd kind of fallen out.
Yeah.
Colin Wilson, okay. That might count. Playoff Colin Wilson.
Tyler on the text line says, Matt Irwin was traded for the legend Corbinian Holzer. Aberg traded for just picks. How could we forget Holzer coming in? Good call.
Great name. What's the who's the kid who's going to be all-name team of all time coming in?
Gunnar Wolf-Fontaine?
Gunnar Wolf-Fontaine, my gosh.
I'm just counting down the days until Gunnar Wolf-Fontaine is here with the Predators.
If Poile moves him, then
right.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There should be absolute mutiny in the building.
Gunnar Wolf-Fontaine, get those jerseys ready. Hopefully he makes the NHL one day, because if he does, you talk about name, image, and likeness.
Paul McCann's going to have a field day.
Oh, God. The first time Gunnar Wolf-Fontaine ever scores a goal, it's going to be amazing. Hope I'm there for it.
Man, that would be fun.
When we come back, we will get back into the name, image, likeness stuff. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Predators, on college sports as well, all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. When we come back, 10 college athletes from back in the day that we wish we could have seen a little name, image, and likeness payment be thrown their way. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.